Hi, I'm John.
Hi, I'm Olivia.
And I'm Andy.
And this week on I Quit Star Trek, we've watched Valiant, and now we're going to ask whether it's going to make us quit.
What did I enjoy about this? I actually think this was so close to high art, it was almost perfection.
You like it when kids die. Interesting.
No, I thought it was almost, if it was Riverdale style, CW style, it would have been
so if it
the greatest
been
episode of Star
kids
Trek.
Kids dying.
If KJ Apa was Captain whatever his name, Tim.
Captain Methamphetamines.
This would have been hot.
Yeah, I mean, I do like it. Here are some 17-year-olds. They're all a mess. They all got themselves killed. The only sane person on this ship is Jake Sisko, who is also the tallest person on the ship, which is extremely funny.
I felt so bad for Jake. He was the only voice of reason, and it was deeply upsetting.
Yeah. I don't know. That's just kind of like, wow.
I would just like to point out, firstly, Jake is a terrible reporter, and he's also a terrible friend.
No. Andy, hold on. Let's get
it. You've only been here 30 seconds. Come on.
Terrible friend.
Where's the lie?
Nob joined a cult after 5 minutes, okay? And abandoned his bestie for a cult. Starfleet.
But he's only on that shuttle in the first place because he was using his friend to try and get an exclusive story. Because of nepotism.
God. That's fine. That's what all journalists
do. I mean, that's the function that all journalists do, Andy.
No, fair point.
And it's just how the force estate works. It's purely vibes and nepotism. I can agree with the terrible friend thing because he should have just not lied to Nog and then not had an argument with Nog and found like a smarter way to do that, but also he is like 17.
That's old enough to be better.
I mean, I've seen worse Star Trek, and I'm sure you have too, Andy. So why don't you, you know, where did you start with Star Trek, and do you have a first quit moment you'd like to tell us?
Where do I start with Star Trek? Star Trek has been with me my entire life. Like, one of my earliest memories is when I was in primary school. And we had to build spaceships for a lesson, what have you. And everyone's turning up with little white painted, you know, juice bottles as, you know, approximate rockets. I decided I was going to make a functional model of the Enterprise A. So, you know, a couple of dinner plates for the saucer, McDonald's cup for the neck. You know, it was beautiful. Toothpaste tubes for the nacelles. I'm pretty sure my parents still have it somewhere in the loft for God only knows whatever reason.
That's beautiful. So, that's and frightening.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, as you can see from behind me, the affliction has taken deep root here.
For those listening in an audio format, Andy is pointing at two cases full of Eagle Moss models and a wall covered in Star Trek art.
Some of this is your Edge of Midnight stuff, right?
Yes, but, you know, I only do so much.
Some of it is. Just over there. You know, but
there's more over there. But, yeah, and do you remember the first time you thought, this is the worst show I've ever watched?
The first time I suppose I came close to quitting Star Trek would probably, in a joking sense, there's probably episodes of Voyager where I was just like, this annoys me.
And here
but
we go.
Truly, the first time that I was like, I quit Star Trek was Into Darkness. That was so close to where I'm done with this.
You're
shit.
One of us
so
soldiers. I'm sorry, but you see, it should be Voyager.
It's like, you wanted to do Into Darkness for this, and I said no. And there's three reasons I said no. One, takes too long.
He's a hater.
You're a coward.
Two.
True.
I just can't face myself to watch that film again. And three, there are 3 dozen people who've asked me to do Into Darkness over the last 4 years.
Yeah, honestly, from the beginning. Like,
from the beginning, people have wanted to do Into Darkness for 4 years.
As one of your dearest friends, John, and I would like to point out, you owe me. So at some point, we're doing Into Darkness.
It's the point. Not only do I owe you, Andy, you do pay me infrequently for labour. So
I don't think, now that I was anti-John, as is my initial thoughts and all things, but now it concerns me actually watching Into Darkness. I am anti-you, Andy.
But the thing is that now you have your own flat. We could watch Into Dark. We could experience it together.
Sorry, you want to christen my flat with a curse, essentially.
No. We'll do it like 6 months in.
Right. I'll get the sage.
We'll get back to you on Into Darkness because we do have to do it because it's vile. But
Shout out. For now,
it's time to do Valiant. And Olivia, do you want to take us in to Valiant?
I will take us into Valiant. What do we open on? We have Odo and Quark in a lover's tiff. I love to see the little guys.
They're just sassy having... bitch, Odo.
Odo is just a bitch. He's not sassy. What is it?
The replicator
is having some sort of tech issue.
He's having a tech issue, which means that he has to do actual work.
And Jadzia comes to the rescue, but he's distracted because she's so pretty.
And
she's
married.
So fine. And married.
I love how it's like Ron Moore, the greatest writer ever, opens it with an infidelity joke. It with a long shot on Terry Farrell's ass.
Yeah, what was the unnecessary OnlyFans vibes? That was very Rick Berman of them.
Yeah, the only plus is that they play the all bad things are happening musical cue while he does it. Do you, like, you see, you know Quark's bad because the music says so.
Yeah, yeah. As always, Star Trek is a moral force. And
yes, it's going good. But then we cut to two children going on a diplomatic mission.
Which, you know, that's great. I mean, Jake is a journalist.
Jake is a journalist. Nog is an ensign. How old is Nog?
Well, it's the thing, because Aaron Eisenberg is a lot older than Sir Clofton was, despite playing people around the same age. So that was always a...
Yeah, Aaron Eisenberg was like 20 years older than him.
He looks 13.
That's just called
being short. I know
you
can't see him, but he also just looks 13 under there.
Yeah, I mean... Because Nog is like Jake's age, and then Nog goes to the academy for what? He only does 2 years there before he gets breveted, doesn't he?
It's two or three. It's season three he goes to.
Yeah.
No, it's season two he goes to the academy.
Is it season two? Is it?
Yeah, end of season one is the Jem Hadar, isn't it? Or was that
end of season two is the Jem Hadar.
Okay, so it's season three then he goes.
I thought this kid was like 11 at the beginning. He's going to the
No, he's just short.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That was my baby boy.
So yeah, basically, Nog is being sent to try and get the Ferengi into the war, which, go Nog, you know.
Why are we trusting a kid? Sorry, this is insane. I'm
He's the only Ferengi in Starfleet.
This is racism.
It is, here's the point. It is both insane... And the most Star Trek to Star
Trek.
This
is literally what happens when you're the black kid in school and the photographer comes around. They're like, we need you. We need
It's both that and Star Trek writers not believing diplomats are real. It's like, now we know that there are people who are trained to do this, but we don't care, so we're sending a child. But actually then again, his grandmother is dating the Grand Nagus.
It's all about
Nagus. I don't think we know this at this point, do we? Or had that come out?
I don't think we know.
Spies knew the Starfleet.
I don't think we know that. But also, just on the point about racism in this episode, Jake's suggestion to Nog when the Jem Hadar are attaching are, "You're a Ferengi. Why don't you make a deal with them?"
I clocked that and I was like,
"The funniest."
I'm calling the police.
I love that he does it and Nog just looks at him and goes, like, "Are you fucking kidding?
How dare they make my boy Jake do a microaggression? He would never."
The only way I can forgive that if there's like a whole lot of that's just a running joke they have, like the whole bit where like Nog asks Jake, "Why don't you use money?" And Jake's like, "We just don't have money.
We don't have money. We're above that."
Like, they've been friends for long enough to have weird jokes that would be offensive to everyone but them.
Yeah.
Like, we all have friends like that.
Yeah.
You know?
We
like,
all cancel
like
each
Richard
other
Nixon. Together. And everyone Richard Nixon spoke to.
No.
Richard Nixon did nothing wrong. Apart from this thing.
Well, certainly not in Futurama, anyway.
No. So, yeah, they get ambushed by the Jem Hadar and they try and fight in a runabout.
Runabout, which is a very wise choice, I feel.
And then they don't, so they get caught. And then they get saved by the Valiant, and Jake gets blown up, and then they end up on the ship full of children.
Oh, Jake opens with the head injury. He's, like, been completely knocked down.
You see, my first thought is, watching this, was they do... I don't know whether it's every time I watch Valiant, the more they feel like kids...
They look like kids. They looked 35.
No, that's John, a skill issue.
That's just you getting older, my friend.
Yeah, I know that bit. But it's like, when I first was Valiant, they were like all older than me. And then now I'm like, no, they're kids.
I'm just going to...
They're not...
John, what
year what kind of 35-year-old are you talking to?
No, but they look 35 and 13. Like the blonde lady that he has the weird sexual...
That's just Olivia, that's just called 90s haircuts.
She looked 35.
Actually, I would say that's 90210 syndrome. Where obviously they have 35-year-old men playing high schoolers in the US.
But these guys, I think all these actors were actually quite young though.
Yeah.
My other first point is the first cadet we meet is a chief petty officer, but how can an officer cadet be a chief petty officer?
Here we go. They're talking about some nerd shit.
Are you looking
what the
for
hell?
Logic in this episode?
What the hell is
John?
A chief?
Yes, this is like Chris Star Trek. This is what we do.
No,
this is
okay, then. Pause. What is a chief petty
officer? It is a senior non-commissioned officer. So they didn't go to
extremely
military
academies. Petty, so petty, you wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, like, they have a podcast petty. Just for it.
You're being so petty right now.
No, but like, yeah, basically they're not an officer, but the cadet has technically been demoted.
Oh, and that's Blondie.
Yeah, Blondie, the one who they first meet.
Yeah, she seems to have the energy. She's done some shit. I don't.
So then they go to the bridge, and there's all these children fighting the Jem'Hadar. Or we meet Captain,
including a child we've seen before.
Yeah, a child who technically committed treason.
The
kid, the helmsman. Remember in season 4 of DS9 when there's a coup?
Yeah.
The kid did part of the coup.
Yeah.
Okay, and maybe he's grown up since then. Maybe he's like done some yoga and some meditation.
I love that you'll forgive. I love that you'll forgive him and not Odo.
Odo's a bitch. Okay, here's the thing with Odo. Odo is a bitch, and then also he broke Kira's heart. Did this little kid break Kira's heart?
Odo broke Kira's heart to save the galaxy from fascism.
Odo didn't have to stay with the fascist Jello.
He did. He had to do some denazification, and the only way to do that is to become Jazz Goop.
He could have visited intermittently with
No. You know what happens when you visit intermittently? You end up with Operation Paperclip. You visit intermittently, they all go to Brazil. You end up with if you visit the Dominion, the Changeling, intermittently, you end up with the boys
South
from Brazil.
With really dodgy German accents.
Yeah, you end up with the plot of Picard season 3. That's how you visit intermittently.
Okay, fine, John. Odo's a scholar and a gent, and he was a great man. Is that what you want from me?
No.
He was a fascist, and he's
he was a
Carabons.
Vichy French policeman. He was the guy from... He is unironically just the guy from Casablanca.
He's just that guy.
You've never seen Casablanca.
I've never seen Casablanca. We'll always have.
Andy, you're taking over as second host.
Okay.
You've seen Casablanca.
This is so... Okay, I'm...
We'll watch Casablanca.
Oh, no,
we're
replacing you, John. We're replacing you.
Actually, I did say that in the last episode. We have Andy that
yeah,
I was going to replace
yeah.
you, so I'll forget.
So, we joined this ship of kids, and...
Just for clarity, I feel we need some sort of disclaimer after that sentence. We joined this ship of kids. Because Operation U-Tree is rushing towards us now.
We joined the ship of cadets who've all just running this ship.
It's not our fault that Roald Moore let some children loose.
He did. So we find out from Captain Tim Waters, who is unironically an Seth MacFarlane doing fan fiction in his backyard, Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
And can I might say, one of the all-time punchable faces in all of Trek.
Oh, yeah. Like
you just want to punch that face.
He immediately unsettles me. My spirit does not take him.
He's not something up with him.
But I'm down for the ride. I also, and we'll get to this, I was convinced that he killed the other captain, but that apparently never comes
No, that's just... Okay. So we'll get to that, which is basically Tim Waters, who, extremely punchable, but like doing like a bad Captain Kirk impression. Basically, the cadets are out, the war started, all the adults got killed, which is incredibly suspicious. Yeah. There's big IF vibes going on, if you've ever seen. That's a very long-standing British reference. Have you ever heard of IF?
What the
it's a film with Malcolm McDowell
where
he goes to like he's at like a public school, private school for the Americans, and it's horrible and everybody's horrible. So he and a bunch of the other anarchist kids steal a bunch of guns and shoot up the entire school population and have to be like gunned down by the army.
I can't even process this because it's so fucked.
Oh, it's Malcolm
McDowell. You want me to know something so British?
It's a great film, mainly because like.
There's a school shooting? What's this?
Basically, it's a school shooting film, but it's British and from the 70s.
That's
and it's got Malcolm McDowell in it.
How
he was in Star Trek.
How eclectic.
Anyway, it's that. Did IF happen on the Valiant? This is there will be 5 people listening to this podcast who got that, and I want you all to tell me.
John's addressing camera.
There is a camera in the room. There is multiple cameras in the room. We'll explain that
it's
later.
It's terrifying. Yeah.
So, Tim is in charge, and he's got... Karen, what's that said? Karen Shepherd.
She's just Karen.
She's Karen.
Just Karen.
But she's also the thing about what I've read. What's great about this is they're all cadets, which means they're all actually undergrads. Like the oldest they could be is like 22, 23, possibly.
More horrifying.
And the youngest is 17. That's explicitly said. So just think about the worst people you knew in student government or student politics or Model UN or the student union.
Jesus Christ!
And that's who these fuckers are. That's how Nog describes, because they're all Red Squad. They're the best of the best. They have special quarters. They're specialists. They are the student union.
There's They're like the worst.
You know the people at university who like declared it a nuclear free zone and spent like and are like, we've done something. They're in charge of a starship now.
Sorry, is that what was going on at Edinburgh?
We fixed it. No, the University of Leicester declared itself.
We've disarmed.
The University of Leicester once declared itself a nuclear free zone, even though they had a nuclear reactor on site.
I mean, that's glorious.
Yeah, but no, and Southampton, it's like, well, what is declaring itself a nuclear free zone? It's like, this place is a rat free zone. It's like, what, you wouldn't know unless you're going to rip the walls open. It's like, it's a nuclear free zone. That'll stop the Russians. Those kind of people, they're in charge of a starship now, and they're all dicks.
The prefect.
Can we just talk about why they're in charge of a starship?
They murdered everyone, Andy. There's no way that these guys just died. Oh, yeah, immediately four of our adults in the ship died. You killed them. I know.
I don't think you're entirely wrong there. John, as you will recall, obviously, as a historian, you know, towards the end of that fundamentalist engagement in the 1940s, what was it? The Second World War.
The big one.
The big one. There was this whole thing where certain Nazi U-boats were rumoured to have been taking, you know, fleeing Germans off away, you know, to get away with all the gold and all that sort of stuff. Valiant is the leftovers of Leighton's queue, basically. Red Squad is a Leighton thing, and they just fucked off when we saw the writing on the walls. That's what's going on here.
See, the problem is that I'd agree with that, except that there's 2 years between the start of the war, a year and a half between the start of the war and the Leighton coup.
So fucked up, they're talking about war in Britain. Like, what is
I that? Think the more interesting... to me, the answer, obviously, is that Red Squad existing after the Leighton coup is a sign of that sort of latency, that they won't get rid of it. I think what's more fascinating is that these... And I think this is kind of part of what's good about the plot. These cadets are so self-assured that their immediate answer was, we should go home. Like, Janeway has better instincts than these guys. Just go home. Just go home.
That's damning.
Yeah. Even Jonathan Archer was like, just go home.
Their first instinct to any criticism is to start chanting, Red Squad, Red Squad, Red Squad.
As I said, they are like everyone you know in student politics. They have no argument.
But you know what upset me the most about that chant is that the name isn't that lit. The name isn't worth a chant.
To be fair, Olivia, it is an American university. They all have terrible chants.
It's like better than like Appa Kappa.
It's like they all do like Greek shit, or they go like, let's go, can stay, or some bullshit. Like, if you're an American person who likes university chants, come up with better ones. Millwall could do better than you, and they're all drunk race. Well, I'm not going to say
Does anyone hear? Well, it's fine. It's fair.
Millwall does better than you. And they pre-send riot police to Millwall matches.
Can we get sued by defamation by Millwall?
No, because it's true.
Millwall are notoriously known for their race.
Yeah, the thing about it is, even with UK libel law, I think we'd win that case.
It's fine, I've got us.
Nick, don't use this bit for your stock footage. Don't use this bit. But yeah, so I'm fascinated by it because the whole thing is written, this whole bit, where like we introduce this maverick captain and his stubborn first officer and the new guy has
been to the use of the term maverick captain. It makes him sound
cool. I'm putting air quotes around everything. Maverick captain, okay. Stubborn first officer. And then Nog. Here's the point. They're all cadets. Nog is a commissioned officer. Nog could just actively pull rank at all of them and go, no, we're going home. And there's nothing they could actually do because they all have brevet ranks.
But they would probably just lock him in the brick. Those guys.
Yeah, this is the point. They could. And I think there's part of it when... Part of it is that Nog as part of the system. So I know you're calling it a cult, but you're correct. As part of the system of Starfleet and the culture of it, Nog's, and as an ensign, he's not got the experience to go, no, hang on.
But he also, I think he's a shy little guy.
He's a shy little guy.
He's ambitious, but he's not a dick.
He's also been trying to prove himself. These are the people he's been wanting to prove himself like since... he was in the academy, because we know that from Homefront and Paradise Lost, right? But Nog should have just pulled rank on them.
I don't know what they would have done to him. Question, would you rather join Red Squad or Scientology? Real quick.
Scientology, you do get to meet Tom Cruise.
God forbid.
Only if you pay a lot, though. Only if you pay a lot.
Yeah, that's true. You don't have to pay anything to be in Red Squad. You just have to sacrifice yourself upon the altar of freedom.
That sounds very American. That's giving me...
I mean, it is a quote from Abraham Lincoln.
I was going to say, is that from the Amiga?
No, it's from the American Civil War.
Sorry, America. I forgot you were real.
It's from the end of a letter Lincoln wrote to a mother who all three of her sons had been killed.
Oh.
In, like, a year. And he wrote... It's a great letter. But it's a great phrase. But, like, that's the price you pay. With Scientology, it's several million dollars.
Yeah, but I get those cool books. They're kind of like Star Trek.
You get the book from Dying, too. It's just called, like... you know, a funeral plan.
Doesn't want me
I mean, I will say this. I think with Scientology, obviously, if anything goes wrong, you're facing hefty lawsuits. With Red Squad, I'm pretty sure one good slap on each of them would probably put them in their place.
But yeah, this is part of it. Is that Jake is older than all of them.
Yeah, how... Sorry, what is the age difference now? Let's establish.
Jake is... I think Jake is like 19 or 18.
And Nog is what?
Similar age.
Okay.
But also Jake... The other funny thing, of course, is that Sirek Lofton is significantly taller than everyone else in this episode.
He should just, by his commanding presence, take over.
Because it's kind of this thing where, like, all actors are short, right? But look, that's just the rule. They make actors short because it's cheaper to film them. That's not even a bit.
What is this slander?
But Sirek Lofton had, like, the biggest growth, but he's huge. You look at him any scene in DS9 in the later seasons, he's massive. He's outgrown the sets, especially on, like, the Defiant, the Valiant in this episode. He is taller than every single person he sees.
He's just that guy.
Anyway, so Nog is now the chief engineer, and
also, I'm sorry, Nog. I know that you're doing your best and you're going on your journey as a cadet or as an actual Starfleet officer. But someone who hires you after 5 seconds, scam, no? Like, if I got an interview and was hired on the spot, I'm like, oh, that's
this is like one of those advertising firms where they say you go on Indeed and they say you're getting paid $28,000 a year, but it's actually commission, so you're just fucked. And that's basically what Nog happened. He's on commission, which is destroy this battleship or you die.
And you respect that guy enough to almost pay for it
as well.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
He's joined a module of a marketing scheme. And that marketing scheme is military jingoism. So we then have probably one of the only good scenes I was like, this is nice, in the episode, which is Jake chatting up, what's her name, Dorian?
Oh, such a guy. Just because Jake gets to flirt with a girl.
Oh, but it was also like Sirek Lofton can act.
Yeah, but also she... Well, no, actually, it's that girl gets like a whole ass monologue. And I was like, sorry, there's some nepotism behind the scenes there. Why does that girl get a full monologue
there's
out
no
of
nepotism.
Nowhere?
It's just that she's a secondary character.
No, someone got paid. Someone paid
Olivia,
so
really
she could get a monologue.
But like,
yes, please.
Sometimes shit just happens.
No, it was corruption.
Sometimes shit
it was
just
corruption
happens.
And I know it.
Sometimes it is corruption. The nepotism was God.
Oh, God. That was exactly. That gave me an existential crisis.
There you go. Anyway, so
for a while.
You know, Dorian is from the moon. Jake calls her a lunar scooter, which is the worst thing I've ever heard.
What is going on with Jake and these like microaggressions? That seems racist.
Okay.
Moonist.
I mean, the gag is it's something his grandfather says.
Exactly.
More like, and we've
that was a slur.
We met Grandpa Sisko.
he's
he probably hates augments. You know, he probably voted for, you know. He's pro Rittenhouse. If you get the reference, please send me a message.
People who don't know that
people don't know that.
That could sound crazy. But it's not that one.
It's not that one. It's another one. Go read Edge of Midnight. Yeah. I don't know why I'm pointing at the camera. Anyway, but she gets quite upset because Jake reminded her of home and why she's out here fighting. And for some reason, that's bad.
She says that, what was she saying? That when the sun or the moon when the moon rises, it's like she's meeting God. You're
that
telling me she didn't get paid
so
for that
shit? I
like
that. That was great. It was a great monologue.
Yeah.
And the lunar sunrise bit is great. And then in For All Mankind, Rondi Moore actually got to show a lunar sunrise. You got to do it.
I haven't seen it.
Watch For All Mankind. You'll like it.
Is it going to be sad? What's
Well,
oh yeah, it's super sad.
It's super sad.
Okay, great. It's gonna break my heart. Love it.
Anyway.
Oh yeah.
So then.
But it's really good. It's really good. It is the, oh my god, this show hurts so much. Show.
So is it gonna be like sort of Battlestar Galactica level of turmoil in my heart?
Yeah, but it's also good music.
Galactica wishes it had this level of turmoil.
Sorry, John. Battlestar Galactica has amazing music. I will do an interpretive dance into that intro.
Sorry, John. I'm with Olivia here. How dare you, sir?
I mean,
how dare you?
Battlestar Galactica is great, but it doesn't use Moon Age Daydream to show the landing of a lunar base.
Sorry,
and
John?
Nothing will beat that. That is the best shot Rondi Moore's ever done. It's the shot of the Jamestown base being flown into David Bowie.
John, one of our best friends has a tattoo of
BSG music. I know the All Along the Watchtower, but shout yet, Ty. I'm sorry. Yep, Olivia's
Thank
right.
Thank you, Ty.
But
I got
the
you.
Point. Ty, or you know, that's great. Everybody wants to rule the world to a sea dragon being launched Pacific Ocean.
John.
Back in
Ben
Black,
McCreary
to a
was using taiko
launch.
Drums and bagpipes before Hans Zimmer realized that was cool. You know,
okay,
he was a decade ahead of it. Okay.
Well, all I'm going to say is, actually, I regret saying this because now I agree. Now I'm agreeing with you because I'm thinking about the actual original score for All Mankind. There's nothing to come to write home about.
We got him, guys.
Yeah,
no, it's all the incidental music.
Ben McCreary, I'm sorry I doubted you. God save the king. Anyway, so we Nog breaks all the rules, Scotty style, to fuck with the engines to make them work. Which go Nog.
Excuse me, no, he breaks all the rules Chief O'Brien style.
Chief O'Brien
style. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Scotty never admits to breaking rules. That's the difference. Yeah,
but somehow he gets shit done that would take 5 hours in.
Yeah. Scotty just lies about how long it takes to do shit. Yeah.
My favorite gag is that, like, Miles O'Brien says, I'm going to break some rules now. Okay, I've done it. Julio Forge has never broken a rule in his life, and that's why nobody likes him.
Nerd.
And Scotty breaks the rules constantly. And nobody ever questions it, or he just doesn't mention it.
Does Scotty just use, like, weaponized incompetence? He's like, oh, yes, this is going to take 3 weeks. Oh, I'm no, done in 5 hours.
See, Scotty,
I have to disagree here. Scotty is a pure PR machine. Scotty has built up his reputation for himself just through rumor. O'Brien is what Scotty wishes he was.
Oh, but it's also very simple, which is that this comes back to my Montgomery Scott was a private, was a. Rating and a petty officer, because he just knows he can just say what the fuck he wants to an officer and there's nothing they can do about it because they don't know how to do what he's going to do. He's like, that's going to take 3 weeks. And they're like, I think you're lying, but if I'm wrong, it'll be on my head and you're the actual engineer. So I just go, carry on, Mr. Scott. And he just takes another 6 hours and fucks off to the pub.
He's a king.
Whereas Miles O'Brien, a century later, I can't get away with that. We've got too many forms to fill out these days.
O'Brien's already gone through enough. He doesn't have time for
O'Brien's, it. O'Brien's done enough. O'Brien has suffered. He had to go to war. Repeatedly. Anyway, so Waters is a pill popper who basically threatens Dorian for being homesick.
Well, it's like a no emotion ship. You can't be sad. Like, what happens when Jake gets in so much trouble just for mentioning, hey, where
he gets
from?
Pulled out. What's fascinating is it's all structured, all the kind of scenes are structured like sequences from like an old style 50s or 40s war film, except that. They're just fucked. Like a sequence is like, buck up. We gotta think about country. We gotta focus on the mission. It's like
Queen and Country.
Well, Zeif and Country.
Is that another Edge of Midnight reference? What was that?
Technically, it's a reference to David Mack's book.
Okay, we're gonna start making John pay for these.
No, but it's like they're great because it's like Waters being like, you gotta focus on the mission. It's like if this was anyone but a 19-year-old giving it. It might have some impact, but it's a 19-year-old giving it, so I'm just kind of like... But also, you're bad at this. Like,
John,
you shouldn't...
John, this is how Penny feels when you try and speak about being optimistic about life. This is that. That is that exact... And this is a very niche reference.
But I'm sorry that...
Exposed.
The thing is that I'm not being like, buck out. I'm like, I've got hope. Whereas Tim Waters kills hope, and also his stomach by taking all those methamphetamines.
What's he popping?
Do we know? He's popping stims, which is polite code for methamphetamine. He's on speed. That's how he's staying awake. It's stims, but it's speed.
Isn't that like what all people in the army do? You know.
I hate to say yes, but the US Air Force was giving people like methamphetamine to keep them awake as recently as Afghanistan.
Oh, I thought it was just World War II. Okay,
No.
I mean, the British Army used to be giving out cocaine in their care packets. So.
Yeah, they stopped doing that because my favourite fact
they is... Stopped they stopped because they no longer care?
They stopped doing it because it was more effective to just give guys tea.
Oh. Yeah.
It's my favourite fact because they gave them the coke. And the come down from it was so hard, it was just better to just give them more tea and keep them awake that way. But during the Afghan War, the US Army pilot on methamphetamine accidentally machine gunned a bunch of Canadians.
Oh.
And they just kind of went, whoops.
Oopsies.
And
anyway.
I don't think he even got charged with it. It's kind of like, he was on meth, it was not really his fault, which is horrible. Anyway, we've been distracted because Jake then gets completely bulled out they're like, oh, you know.
Well, they want it to be Spock style. You can't be getting emotional.
You can't be emotional. She wants to go home crying to mummy. They should be.
We're on
they're
the
cadets.
Bridge.
Where I was going to say, it's not that. It's the grown-up in the room who's saying, you know, this cult we're in, maybe we shouldn't be in the cult.
Yeah.
And that's very dangerous to cult leaders.
It is fascinating that, like, Jake is the adult in the room. I think that's an important part of this episode as well. The adult in the room, and that's not something that happens with him very often in the show. Like this is sort of an arc that started with Nor Battle of the Strong, the Space Mash episode. Do you remember that one? The one where he goes with Bashir to the hospital to the planet with the hospital.
Oh.
And
Oh, that's when those caves.
He gets stuck in the caves and he gets blown up and stuff.
Sad.
Yeah, I love that episode because it's Space Mash.
So every time we let Jake out, he gets injured dramatically.
Jake, well, it's more like Jake growing up.
He gets traumatized. He gets traumatized,
but that's just called war. I don't want to tell you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Could have been worse.
So then, basically, they decide they're going to have a speech because they find this Klingon, this battleship, right?
Jem'Hadar
battleship, but it's fucking huge. So huge, in fact, that it's a completely CGI model.
And they decide to tail it because that's safe and that's fun.
They tail it and they look at it.
Well, their supposed mission, the whole reason they have disobeyed orders and continued to do this, is they had orders to identify and scan this battleship, which was apparently the orders that they'd received. So this is their one last mission. If we do this one last mission, we can finally go home.
See, guys, this is why I never be in Starfleet, because I'm not dying for that. I'm dying because you want to take measurements? No, I'm good. I'm going to be on Riser. I'm going to be chilling.
I mean, realistically, you are not on Riser. You are sitting in an office somewhere doing legal papers.
No.
So that somebody... So
you
that
think
the guys
if I'm in Jean's wonderful vision, I'm going to be working? I'm going to be painting on the beach. I'm going to be...
Jean's going to be the koala.
Vibing. I'm going to be wearing clothes. I'm going to be wearing like the Cisco style clothes where it's like the vest and it's so fucking ugly.
Well,
but
you
it's
enjoy
dramatic.
The beach and the Jem'Hadar come up and blow you.
Someone else will do the war for me, John. It's working for me so far in life. I'm cancelled. It's over.
Cancelled for your anti-conscription stances.
I just like peace. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Do you? Anyway, so they found this massive battleship and their orders were to scan it. Also, Starfleet doesn't know it's kids and the kids have just not told them, which is just like, no, fuck, break the...
Sorry, so who has record of where the... Like, they don't immediately know
no.
This is a lost ship of children?
No, they don't know. Starfleet does not know this is a lost ship of children.
Why not? That's
because there's children...
Also, well, yeah, but once again, this is what Waters is saying. Waters is saying this. I call shenanigans because he claims... They were on a mission to circumnavigate the entire Federation on a warship.
It's a joyride.
I mean, shenanigans.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that significant numbers of cadets on wartime ships is not unprecedented. I mean, I've just been reading about Battle of Coronel in the First World War, where the Royal Navy sent battleships that were functionally falling apart to sea, full of, like, weekend sailors and cadets. And everyone was like, those kids are going to die. And we're like, yeah, we kind of don't know what to do about that. We didn't expect to send them to the South Atlantic. And it's like, should we send them home? It's like, we can't.
Too late.
It's too late now. So it's not without precedent, but those kids weren't being put on... You weren't manning a top-of-the-line battleship with kids.
So behind the scenes, how many children are allegedly on this ship? Hundreds?
Well, it's a whole... They say they're under man. I think it's meant to be like... It's some about 20 or... We see about 30 people in the mess room, don't we?
But secret... Mm. But that's because we
Andy is currently hauling up a crew manifest. I can see it.
One is looking up on the Wikipedia here, as you do. Memory Alpha.
I just want to understand why there are only 7 adults in total.
Yeah, that's... There are only 7 adults as well. That's insane.
On a massive...
On a training ship as well. You need more than 7.
Only 7 adults, but they had all the phasers, so, you know, they were able to keep all of that
working. Okay. At the end of the day, Tim Waters, is a murderer.
You see, I'm now even more convinced, Andy, by your argument that perhaps they were up to some shenaniganry.
So let me just... Let's look at this timeline here, okay? So they were supposedly on this mission to circumnavigate the entire Federation in a state-of-the-art warship, a fully armed state-of-the-art warship.
They say in the run-up to the war, but if you follow DS9, it's basically an undeclared war from the beginning of Season 5 onwards.
Yeah, like, it's been a while.
In Season 5, the Circumnavigating Federation, while the Federation is at war with the Klingon Empire.
You see, I'm thinking what's happened here, basically, is after Layton's coup, Red Squad, and we see the con officer is the same person from Red Squad, so I think Red Squad was set up by Layton as his own personal... army, you know,
we know Red Squad's around.
Going...
Well, we have because it replaces Nova Squad, of course.
Exactly. So,
how many
Layton
squads are there?
Well,
at least 2.
There's at least 3 squads in a platoon. There's a lot of platoons
Jesus
in the army.
Christ.
Let's go to the structure. 3 platoons in an army. There's a lot. There's at least 40.
And none of them.
Yeah. But anyway, I think what you've got here is Layton sets up Red Squad as his personal Praetorian guard, whatever you want
of
to
teenagers.
Be.
Of teenagers. This, yeah, his Hitler youth. His Layton
yeah, his
youth.
Hitler youth, basically.
His Layton's lads.
Layton's lads. That sounds much more whimsical. I love it.
It's Layton's lads. And then when he gets deposed, when it all goes south for them, they all hop into the nearest ship, which just happens to be a Defiant class, with people who are sympathetic to the cause, and they go, let's just head out that way somewhere, and when the war kicks off and we're proved right, then Layton will be freed and we can come back and get back on with running the Federation as we want to run it.
I think it might not be that the fair. I think it's also the Starfleet is like, these kids did something bad, but they also kind of aren't responsible for it, and we put everyone who was responsible for it in prison, but we don't really want them hanging around.
And they're their best guys.
So we'll just fuck them off to the rest of, to the edge of the galaxy.
But they sent Tom Paris, who is the son of a senior admiral, to New Zealand for just hanging out with a Mickey.
Oh, but Tom Paris got caught.
And also, Tom Paris has an annoying
face.
One
of those cadets got caught.
One of those cadets, by Cisco. Here's the point, though, which is that none of the cadets were caught on record, right? Whereas it's quite possible that Tom Paris essentially basically got his hand slapped on by a copper, because he is that stupid. Mm.
Can I use this entire episode to question the Federation and Starfleet? Because absolutely. Why are those their best guys? They were all dicks. There was no, like, emotional vulnerability or intelligence.
Part of the point of this episode is that they are not the best guys.
But how did they get there?
Because
someone thought they were the best guys, and I want that guy fired.
Because nepotism and academic genius are not... Like, part of this episode is the point that, like, being good on paper is not the same as being good in practice, and just assuming just being the best of the best.
And I think that they should figure that out before you give them a fucking ship, John.
I mean, there is a reason that most actual military academies do not have elite squads, because it's dumb. Like,
if I was there, there'd be an elite squad, but
the average, like, naval academy, that's not like, you are the top 10 people, we're going to give you special shit and make sure you think you're a Praetorian.
If I join the Navy...
Like, you graduate certain...
If I join the Navy and I created my own elite squad...
You'd probably be told... Well, actually, there are lots of rules against that, because a lot of those elite squads, like the little man with the moustache...
How can they stop me? Oh.
Yeah.
That's why they don't like it. That's why they're really not keen on, like, cadets.
All I'm saying is, when they're all shouting, red squad, just replace that with Zeke and Heil, and it's very much the same vibe.
And I think that's kind of what they were going for.
I look directly into camera.
I think that's this is the point. I love that scene because it explains, you know, we could go home having done this, but we think we can blow up this battleship because it's got this special weakness that only we know how to destroy.
Okay, can we talk about that? Because what in the Death Star is that bullshit?
I think that's the point. I think that is actually the point. It is meant to be like that. Yeah, because everyone watching that will know the whole thing of, like, this super battle station has a weakness only we can find.
Star Trek,
everybody gets that
this.
Trope. It's trope following. It's not Nick. It's just like, it's making you gear up for this war film-like thing. And then you have Nog make it even better by going, we have to get within 300 meters of the target.
300 meters. Absolutely ridiculous.
That's so small. You know, target computers will never lock onto it.
Yeah, exactly.
Blow up one, perhaps back home. Man,
thank you, Andy. But then, of course, the best bit is that Jake goes, you know, my dad is the best at this around, and I think you're all fucking nuts.
I just have a note, in my notes, it just says, let the other ship ponder foolishness. Like, why were they so enthused to die for this? It's been, like, what, 5 hours? I'm sorry. I wouldn't
die for
it.
There is a reason.
It's a cult.
Yeah. But
even not.
But it's also, like, there's a reason that generally they don't let ensigns command important, like, extremely junior officers command important things. Because they have no experience. Like, the whole point, part of this point is that an experienced captain on that ship would have looked at it and gone, I'm going to fuck off because I'm not risking my crew for that. But Tim Waters has no actual experience.
Yeah, and he's young, so he thinks he'll live forever.
Yeah, exactly. They're all young. They think they'll live forever.
Although...
Well, I think there's something to be said about the state of the teaching at Starfleet Academy, because, as you say, this is the second time we've... Well,
third.
This is the second squad where we've seen an elite member who thinks they're better than everyone else get people killed because they're just trying to show off, basically.
Here's the thing.
Not to extend this towards the general point we have in our own way, Andy, but I think there's a large element to here to which Starfleet moving away from the sort of, like, military roots means that they've lost that knowledge that creating elite squads like that is bad generally for morale. So they've just kind of treated the whole thing like a university, as opposed to being like, you might be the best here, but the moment you leave, you're going to get chucked to the ship at the bottom of the ladder. So you just need to recognize that you are only as good as the training, and that is nothing compared to what you learn for the rest of your career. Mm-hmm. But because Starfleet no longer treats itself, no longer thinks that way, it's like, fuck yeah, we've got the 30 best kids and the 30 most motivated kids and the 30th kids who will just do whatever they're told. Nothing bad will come from this.
Here's the thing. Even if I'm a young guy and I just want to make my way in the world, I want to imitate the greats. Kirk never did a victory speech before the battle. He didn't say, yeah, we've done it, lads. Let's go.
Exactly. I think that's part of the point.
Be better, Tim.
But he's also popping pills like he's on fucking Mad Men, so...
R.I.P. Let's not speak ill of the dead.
To your point as well, though, there's the reality of Kirk and then there's the myth of Kirk, which are two very different things.
Yeah. With, you know, you watch actual... You're watching Citizen. Kirk's with half his time going, oh, God, what the fuck am I doing?
And at least he has the sense to have a breakdown. Yeah. Tim would never have a breakdown.
Yeah, don't destroy
unless
the
pills were missing.
Yeah. So Jake's like, this is insane. And then he tries to explain it to Nog. And Nog's like, you know, we've got to do this. It's our duty. And Nog's like, and Jake's like, you are going to get us all killed.
Well, Jake says, like, my daddy would never do this. Which I guess, to be fair, may not be the most. They're trying to make the way for themselves. They want to hear about your...
Well, they
icon
obviously
dad,
respect
what he
him.
Would do.
They obviously respect him as his dad's son. They're obviously then
but they respect,
less respect him because he's not in
the
uniform.
They respect to the extent that they want to replace, I don't know, the greatness that he has. He's got like a cool lineage. Well, nothing, John. They have to go on the suicide mission.
They're clearly disdainful of him because he's not in uniform, which is the most on-brand officer cadet thing I've ever heard.
Gross.
It's like, oh, fuck you.
Just a quick thing that occurred to me, though. Why did they take them off the runabout anyway? Because they destroyed the Jem'Hadar ship.
I think the runabout had
lost... Why not just beam them back to it?
The runabout had lost power.
Fine. Hang around for a couple of minutes, get them sorted, and then off you trot.
I think that's actually... That's another part of it, of course, which is I think that any other Starfleet ship would have repaired the runabout and sent them on their way. But these guys have had no command training. Actually, that's the other thing. They've had no command training, have they?
Why...
Well, I think it's also the fact that they know that the second Starfleet get actual eyes on them, the adventure stops. It's game over.
Yeah.
They can't keep playing as, you know, cosplay Captain Kirk.
That generally
or what was that thing you guys did? Bridge Commander? They have to stop doing that, you see?
Yeah.
They're on a fucking field trip. And
no, but
they
I think that's
died
actually, that is
it.
A really important part of it. They don't want the venture to end. And the point is that if they blow the battleship up and come back having done it, they might all get to keep their commissions. Whereas, quite frankly, the moment anybody with more seniority than Nog turns up, it's like, no, you're all ensigns again.
What is it? Like, just staying in Disneyland to, like, die of thirst? At what cost, guys?
Yeah. So then what happens is Jake gets put in the brig for talking about how this is bad. And then we have a montage of them going, of kids go to war.
The montage is funny.
Because it's a montage. It just comes back to Jake, like, sitting there, like,
we're doing a war. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we have Jake just absolutely depressed. The only person with sense.
And then we cut to the battleship. And the funny thing is, from an angle, that battleship does look like the Battlestar Pegasus. Which is funny. Anyway, so then they do the full attack run, you know, Star Wars shit. They attack the ship. They go along the top of it. There's fires and explosions.
The bridge is immediately on fire. It looks like the depths of hell. I love to see it.
It is the premium of 90s early CGI. JMS, eat your heart out.
Rocks everywhere.
Rocks everywhere. You're going to go through. They do the targeting. They strafe back down. The Jem'Hadar battleship explodes. It's fine.
Fine.
And I love that bit because it's like, did it work? It's like, yeah, we hit it. It's just
direct hit. Did fuck all.
Did fuck all. And
here's the funny thing, right? Here's the thing a lot of people don't realize is with modern tanks and all this, when they keep ammunition and fuel outside of the armor, it allows the stuff to explode away from the ship, which means there's no damage done to it.
Yeah. And I love that bit. It's like, yeah, it just doesn't do anything. But also, you realize that, like, this part of the thing where they have no experience, it's like, they didn't actually check whether it would do anything.
Oh, dear.
And then, like, Waters just freezes. And because he freezes, he gets killed. And everyone dies. It's like the beginning of Wrath of Khan.
It's so abrupt. It's like, they're all gone. It's over. I'm like,
I love it. Because it's just like, you realize it's like 40 minutes, Nog's been like, Red Squad. Yeah, this is everything I wanted to be. And he's just like, suddenly remembers he was at the battle. He was at, like, the Battle of DS9.
Nog should know better.
Nog's been in combat.
Yeah, Nog should have fucking known better. And that's the big takeaway from this episode. This is the episode Nog should have known better.
Is he okay after this? I know we never delve into their emotions.
Oh, no, we do. He is okay. And then he loses his leg, and then he's not okay. It's okay. Then he does some jazz. After he does the jazz. So the lesson here is, if you do jazz, you're better.
Jazz cures all. Knew it.
So Nog realizes, gets him off, gets Jake out of the sick bed. What did I say?
You said something off.
I don't know what I said. I forgot.
Jake, Sean, I don't know what you're watching. The rest of us watched the episode on Paramount Plus. I don't know where you watched yours.
Yeah,
but
Nog gets them off the ship, gets Jake out of the brig. They're found by the Defiant because serendipity, baby.
It's the only ship in the quadrant.
Only ship in the quadrant. Jake is fine. Nog is sad, and Dorian isn't dead.
And she's still in the haze of Tim.
I do love that bit because, like, Nog's like, "Are you gonna write this story up?" And Jake's like, "Yeah." And Nog's like, "Well, it's very simple, which is they were a good crew who made a mistake."
They were not. It was not a good ship, and they were not a good crew.
They weren't.
I know they've just lost their besties, but you were all kind of shit.
But you can see that because, like, Nog says it, and Jake looks at him like, "Are you kidding?
Did you learn anything? It's time for some hard truths."
But it is great because then Dorian's like, no, he was great. And then Nog just walks up and goes, he was a great man, but he was a bad
captain. Another fucking lie. He was a shit guy and a shit captain.
He was a shit guy. He was a bit of a shithead.
But he was young, I guess.
Yeah. So, what did we think of Valiant?
It was a valiant effort.
I won't allow that. No, sorry. Not a valiant effort.
Are we quitting over it? Because I liked this episode. I'm not quitting. I like this. I think it's a good episode of, like, an inversion of typical, like, war film themes and tones and
so
plots.
What you're saying is you would follow Tim Waters
today. No, I would not. I like this episode because it's about why I wouldn't follow Tim Waters, which is that
he'd be in
it's
the
very
with Jake.
Shallow. Yeah, I'd be in the brig with Jake.
I enjoyed seeing shallow teens fuck up in the same way I like watching Euphoria and Riverdale occasionally. I would like the Starfleet Academy show that is upcoming to be in that vein. Yeah. But maybe less murdering the entire crew and possibly murdering your senior officers.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Is so much of it is about basically the correct decisions they should have made are so painfully obvious. I think that becomes the point.
Is that just so we feel good as a viewer? Then?
No, I think we're meant to... we're obviously meant to think that, one, they should have gone back to the Federation.
Yeah.
Two, they should not have attacked. They should be nicer to each other and think about what they're fighting for. Three, they shouldn't attack the battleship. And four, they shouldn't chuck Jake in the brick. They're clearly not good at this.
Yeah.
And the thing is that you watch some sequences of them and they're clearly not good. It feels like kids playing cosplay.
Mm.
And I think it's meant to.
Okay, well don't...
The fact that they're still...
Don't call out kids playing cosplay. That's me.
You're 25.
I'm just a little guy.
Excuse me,
I'm just
I cosplay.
A 25-year-old.
And I'm a lot older than 25.
Yeah.
Yeah, John. What year were you born again? Exactly.
Let's move on. So are you quitting?
Wait. I'm torn. Andy, you first. Quick.
Am I quitting over this episode? I don't... This is not a poorly made episode, but I think it is a poor episode, if that makes sense. So am I quitting over this? I'm not going to quit over this just because, on balance, there are many worse episodes than this. The problem is a lot of the episodes that I would have perhaps quit, you've already done. So
name
this
them.
Was the kind of one I came up with.
Call them out by name.
Code of Honor? I mean, Alton's definitely...
What's wrong with Code of Honor? And I have that on camera. What did Code of Honor do? Apart from everything?
Apart from the racism and the sexism and the misogyny and everything else that's going on.
That said...
My favourite part of Code of Honor is that originally it was East Asian lizards. And they went, no, that's too racist. We'll just make it black people.
Oh, Star Trek.
That's
so
funny. It's been like, how is East Asian lizards less worse than that?
They were... I was going to say they were doing the best. They were doing what
I mean,
they
got a lot of black people employed that month.
Yeah. We have said they got paid. Black people got paid.
Black people got paid.
Are you anti-black people getting paid, Andy? I'm kidding.
He does pay me.
It's okay. We've got one. We've got one.
I got the one. I would say that I will not quit over this episode. I do not. You need a middle category though. I will tolerate this episode.
That's a no, Olivia.
I want to not quit because I would like to cling on to the delusional version of the episode that's in my mind, where
that's
it's
the
just
correct version. The delusional episode is the correct
version. It's basically a soap opera slash reality TV show, and I would like to see Starfleet Academy take on the helm of Tim Waters, bring him back, resurrect him, Tripstar.
Bring him back as an android.
I would love to see. I would love to see someone write the fallout from this episode, and not in the, oh, he was a good captain and now there's a medal named after him and people honour him in the Academy. I want to see the fallout of this episode.
I want to read...
A lot of people in the Academy lose their fucking jobs over what happened here.
You know how... Andy will know this, but in the real world, when you lose a ship, no matter why, there is an inquiry. Even if, like, it is not your fault. Even if you have the ship blown up by enemy action, you have to go to an inquiry and go, like, the ship was blown up by enemy action... And the inquiry goes like, well, was it really your fault?
This
and
is
you
perfect.
Go, no. And they go, fine.
We have.
They need to do the Valiant Inquiry.
The Valiant Inquiry. Yeah. It's filmed like The Thick of It, directed by, what's his name, Armando?
Armando Iannucci. I was going to say like that or the Kane Mutiny.
Let's fucking get into it, guys.
But that's what I'd like to read. Somebody write me the Valiant Inquiry. Because it would just largely be like, we let a bunch of these cadets go.
It's going to be you, John. You're going to end up writing it. We all know
I've got too much to write. Anyway. While I contemplate the Valiant Inquiry, Olivia, explain the Tripnits to Andy and the audience.
This is so fucked up because we have a professional crew around us, and I have to explain one of the worst things I've ever put out into the world. Tripnips is the scale based on the Enterprise episode Unexpected, in which Trip Tucker gains new nipples. No one asks questions.
Don't worry about it. It's fine.
In that episode,
you get the one on his wrist. He's pregnant.
He's pregnant. The man is pregnant. What more of it? And that's obviously our scale of cursedness because it's a very cursed thing to happen. So
zero nipples is normal. 10 nipples is cursed. Would you like to start us off? How cursed was this episode?
This episode is almost godly perfection. Zero trip nips. Zero. And I stand by that. I will look into every camera, so it's definitely recorded.
I am going to give it 4. Just for
how dare you.
One for the phrase lunar schooner. One.
I'm standing strong.
Yeah. One for the weird Jetsia bit at the beginning.
I'm standing by it. I can
and
do
then
this.
2 for Captain Pillpopper. Oh, no.
That was
fun. 1 for Captain Pillpopper, 1 for Karen.
I can live with this.
Andy?
I'll go for 6.
6.
6 fitness here. And just to explain my workings out, as John's already touched upon most of those ones there, but yes, just Pillpopper Captain, Exo Karen, mild microaggressions and racism from Jake. You know, you're a Ferengi, one, you make a deal with them.
I guess.
He's a terrible reporter. And just the whole fact that this ship and Red Squad are in this predicament and doing this thing.
Yeah. I mean, that gives us a Tripnit score total of 3.3 recurring.
I've saved the episode. You're welcome, Val.
You get 3 and an exponential, 3 and a partially exponential nipple.
I hate the partial nipple.
It's an exponential nipple. That's the important bit.
I hate the images in
right.
my mind.
So now, Andy, you must now give back to us and tell us what your high art pick is. Olivia.
The high art scale is the greatest part of this podcast. It's where we truly get into why we do this. The high art scale is my subjective list, Andy, of what is great Star Trek. I can be convinced, but it truly is just my decision. And there are no real rules. You just have to find the click. I think episodes that are high art are Masks, Spock's Brain, the one with my bad bitch in the jacket in the mental asylum, TOS, Someone Tell Me the Air Name.
Whom Gods Destroy.
And Arena, things like these. So, knowing with that information, would you like to submit anything to my high art list?
A high art list in that sort of vein.
I mean, you can try to go outside the vein, but you know.
If you can convince Olivia.
The success rates are lower.
I mean, weirdly enough, I'd probably say today's episode of Discovery is up there, but
uh-oh.
I don't know if you've
seen it yet. Olivia's not watched it.
I can't believe this is happening on camera. This is so fucked. Well, Andy, get off. Get off the Zoom. Get off the fucking Zoom. This is fucked up.
Cut
the cameras dead ass.
How very dare I? How very dare I?
I will get to it, Paramount.
It's good. It's very good. It's high. I think it's high art.
Wait, does that mean it gets a little silly? I'm excited.
It gets silly. It gets wacky. Burnham has to fight Burnham.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
No,
why
no,
is
no.
everyone fighting themselves? Is it Spock style?
No. It's
Burnham with braids fighting Burnham with the permed hair. Is it actually? Oh, fucking Christ. Jesus Christ.
It's so funny. Sadiqa Barton agrees. Sadiqa is wearing the worst wig.
I quit Star Trek for real. This is Andy, wearing... you've done the opposite of the Hyatt list. I'm done with the fucking franchise. This is the last episode of the podcast. Fuck everyone.
It's actually a really good episode.
There's no way.
No, it is really. Genuinely.
It's a really good one.
It's great fun. It's really good fun, actually.
Rejected. Next.
I will give it's Quality of Mercies, last episode of Strange New Worlds, isn't it?
Okay.
Season one episode, yeah.
Yeah, I will say that is higher. On the caveat, it should have been the last episode of Strange New Worlds. That should have been the end of the show.
Wow, you just like ending things. My love of Star Trek. That's
what I'm here to do.
Strange New Worlds.
Lives and on, of young captains.
And on the subject of ending things... we're going to bring this episode to an end. Andy,
terrible segue, John. You should.
I know, it was horrible. It was horrible, but, you know, all good things, et cetera, et cetera. Andy, where can the people...
Nothing too wild?
Yes. Where can the people find you, Andy?
In Manchester, but don't come looking for me because I won't answer the door. But if you want to stalk me online, you can find me on most social medias at Andy3E. I would say Twitter, but who knows how long that will last. We've been saying it's going to die for the last 6 months.
He's a great guy.
We trust him.
He's been to space.
You can find me on that. I did a book about the Borg and stuff, which you can find at the Wolf 359 Project. John did some stuff in there, most of the appendixes. And I do a podcast as well called The Great Derelict, which is a random about everything and anything to do with science fiction, which John has been on, but Olivia hasn't, which I feel is a grave oversight on your part.
Raise your hand if you think that's fucked up. I don't know why I said this. We're from just John in it. Thank you. Very fucked up. Yeah. I'll be on the podcast.
I think it's fucked up too.
Yay.
Yeah. No one was asking you, John.
But yeah, thank you, Andy. You can find us at Quit Star Trek Pod on Twitter and on other sites. You can email us at iquitstartrek@gmail.com.
We got a TikTok.
You don't use it, but we have a TikTok.
I'm on
that. A video of this
exists.
Will go up on our Patreons. I don't know why I'm advertising our Patreon. While you're watching
it on
Patreon.
You can put a little clip up as a tease on the TikTok, on the Twitter.
Put it on the TikTok
too. You can
too.
See the full thing.
We'll put clips of this on the TikTok. We should. It'd be funny. Andy, you're on TikTok now. I hope you know how to dance.
Not the first time.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And thank you to Nick Guider and Uni at Newsworthy Vision for arranging this, which is why we sound beautiful.
And we need to get this fact out of there. Via me.
Via Olivia.
My improv comedy
But
friend,
it's why we all sound beautiful and crisp and not like our audio got microwaved before we served it to you. And how you're watching this visually on Patreon.
Woo!
Unrealistic expectations for future episodes, though, unless you're coming back here to do all of them in the future.
Bye, everyone.